Welcome to DM to GM. I'm your DM, Russ Moore from Dungeons & Dragons.
And I'm your GM, Sean Howard from The End of Time and Other Bothers.
And we're here to do something. Last time, we played a game with some lovely guests, Tim Lanning from Greetings Adventures and Celeste Conwich from The Venture Maidens. Thank you very much to both of them for coming on. And if you haven't checked them out, go do so right now. And we're going to break down what Sean had to
do. Wait, let's wait for them to do that and come back.
What?
Let's wait for them to go check them out and come back. Just
take
pause
your time
for a sec. Yeah.
Okay, you back?
There we go.
Yeah. Woo! You've listened to their entire backlog of Greetings Adventures, over 400 episodes, right? Yeah, good. But what we're going to do today is Sean prepped that game and we gave him a few constraints. And so we want to break down how he did it, what he did, in hopes to take that and give you something, some useful nugget. We're all about the nuggets here.
Yeah. So for anyone out there that's like, hey, I want to try a new system and I want to just pull a game together for a one-off, we're just going to share what we did. So one of the constraints that I was given was 90 minutes. So I had found the game system. So I found that. I don't think I decided. Do you remember when I sent it on the Discord? I put it late.
It was 2 or 3 days before we played.
Right. So two or three days before we played, I sent the game system to everyone. So I had I guess I read it a little, but I didn't go into detail. But I read it enough to be like, oh, this will be fun. And then I didn't touch it. I found myself thinking about it a little bit, but I was like, I'm just going to wait. And so I basically waited till 90 minutes before we were going to start recording. And I went upstairs and sat down in front of my computer and began to panic.
Which is normal for Sean.
Yes, that's my normal process.
Yeah. It worked out fantastically, I will say. So the game we played was Offworlders by Chris P. Wolf. We'll link that down in the description as well if you want to go check it out. So what about Offworlders made you decide? Because you basically went to all the Powered by Apocalypse games you could see. And what about this one stood out to you?
Well, so I cheated because that would be too much work to go and look at them all. So I went to Stephen Smith, who is our game consultant on Anytime Another Bothers. And I said, hey, I'm running a one-off. I want some Powered by the Apocalypse-like games that would be fun for a one-off. And he was great. He sent me 5 games. The first one was Offworlders. And he wrote these little, I'm going to read them because he wrote these little sentences to hook me because he knows me now. He's like, I'm not going to read a lot. So the first one was, got Starship, need to do something interesting, Offworlders. I was like, interesting. The next one, I almost did it, was Rapscallion, High Seas Piracy.
Oh, that'd be good too.
And if we hadn't just done Flamekin's backstory not that long ago, I probably would have picked that one.
Sure.
I was like, oh, that would be fun. The next one was Warren, and he just wrote Rabbit World. I was intrigued. So I opened Warren, and I started reading it. It was the first one I started to read, and it was, what's that horrible book about the rabbits underground and they're fighting the farmer and Watership Down. It was basically Watership Down in a game. I started to cry just reading the descriptions.
Right.
And basically the rabbits, it says in there, they will not win. They cannot win. Everyone beats them. The farmer, I was like, this is devastating. So I skipped that. The next one was Apillion Dragons. I was intrigued, but I don't know why I didn't look into it. I didn't even look at it. I still haven't looked at Apillion. It might be cool.
You were just so hooked by Offworlders by this point.
I was hooked by Gut Starship. Anything that's close to Firefly is going to get me every time. The last one, this I did look at, was Passion de la Passions. I've pronounced that horribly. I apologize. It's basically a telenovela.
Telenovela.
I'm so horrible. So that would have been fun. So I went with Offworlders. So that's what I did. I picked Offworlders because I wanted a Powered by the Apocalypse game because I wanted something where in my experience with Powered by the Apocalypse, which isn't all that long, they generally are a simple system with the player books they're called, which is really just a sheet that has everything you need on it. It's one sheet that's all the player needs.
Yeah.
Offworlders is not quite that. Right. Because when I sent the sheet around to everyone, I was like, I just sent it to everyone. I'm like, oh, here's the character sheet. So I just forwarded the link. And then luckily I opened it and I was like, oh, there's nothing on this. It's just a couple blanks. Right.
You need part of the book still to fill out the sheets. Yeah.
So I think Offworlders is an older game, and it's interesting that it's built. He credits more Dungeon World than Powered by the Apocalypse system as his influence, though right. Dungeon World is a part of it. Anyways, so it's a fun game, but that's basically how I chose it.
Nice. Starship, I think, yeah, and then when you dropped it in there, I think I messaged you. I was like, we picked the perfect table for this.
Yeah.
So it worked out fantastically. Okay, so after you picked it, you waited 2 or 3 days, mulled it over in your brain, which most of us running games do, some of us more than others. Then it gets to be 90 minutes before. You sit down, you know the call is starting. Where do you start with this book and this prep now?
So I had to read the book. So that took some time. Now, luckily, it's not that big of a book. So it's a great one to pick to run a one-off in space. But I probably spent about 25, 30 minutes, right, just going through the book in more detail. Because I'd basically read the first 15 pages or whatever when I selected it. So I had to go through it. And basically what I started by doing was just writing down the differences in the rules. So Offworlders has, so I'm not answering your question at all, Russ.
That's fine. We'll get there.
Offworlders has an interesting idea. I create little note cards. We'll share a picture of it if we want. We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
I just sent it to Russ. He has it now. So the interesting mechanism in Offworlders that was fun that you'll hear me in the episode, I kept forgetting to do till the end, is slightly different from any other Power by the Apocalypse I've done. And so basically you describe what you're going to do. That's common in these games. And then you pick the most appropriate attribute if the GM determines it's needed. But here's the new part. You talk about potential outcomes at the table. So the person who says, I'm like the aliens reaching out its tendrils to grab your face, and you say, I dodge. Instead of just immediately going to roll, where you'll have a pure success, a partial success, or a fail, you're supposed to have this conversation where I'm supposed to ask, what could go wrong? And it's an interesting mechanism because it allows the player to have a say in the negative. And there's two really neat things from that as a GM in these kind of games. First, I don't have to panic trying to come up with what to do on a fail or a partial success, right? I've already got ideas based on what the player or what we've talked about or what other players have laughingly contributed. And the second part is the player, I think it's less of a GM ganging up on them because they're the ones who came up with sometimes something way darker than I would have come up with.
Well, and we had 4 DM GMs around the table. So anything that we came up with was infinitely 1,000 times worse than anybody else would have, because we like to lean into the, well, let's just make this as bad as humanly possible. So well done on reining that back as well. But I like, I liked it. Primarily because it is less of a feel bad, even when you know you roll a fail. It's less like, oh, well, the GM either arbitrarily picked or was, you know, just looking to gun down this character or something like that.
Yeah. And so 100%. So I like that mechanism, but I forgot about it because it's different. But it actually, I would suggest this system as a fun first system for people because that makes it easier. And then the thing is, most of Powered by the Apocalypse games have some kind of mechanism in them for starting the game or starting the world. You know, we did a version of, what's the monster one? Monster of the Week, right? We did that together. And the book just walks you through the questions. So this one has some similar things. I think it asked how much, basically how much trouble are you in? Who do you owe the most to? Who's your biggest nemesis or competitor? And then it talks about you just completed a dangerous and lucrative job. What was it and for whom? And so I did not have to plan out going into use. I did not have to use these 90 minutes to plan out the arc necessarily.
Yeah.
I could rely on the people around the table, everybody answering these questions, right? Everyone was able to determine how much trouble they're in, how much debt, who they owe money to. And that's in a Firefly like world, right? Who you owe 1 million credits to is a major driving force.
Absolutely.
And so that's fun. So I didn't have to worry about that. But what I did want to do was prepare the potential scenarios or obstacles, right? even without knowing how the play was going to go.
Right.
So what I did do was come up with what I called the first job. So the book recommends you come up with a job to start, an idea. And then I wanted to create a list of NPCs that would you might be needed. And then I created a name card, right? A bunch of names for troopers and for smugglers that I could pull on. I think that's it.
So the scenarios that you had planned out, you planned more of a shell and then used our questions that we answered to fill out the world, saying it's the Imperial, you know, big bad guys or this little bounty hunter over here. Yep. So rather than filling out the world ahead of time, which some DMs and GMs have not a problem with, but get stuck on because they're trying to fill out world and backstory and lore, yep. You left that up to everybody else around the table and then just had this shell of a scenario. I mean, there's a better word for that, but yeah. And then plunked in the world that we had built together.
Yes, the 90 minutes helped. There's only right. so much backstory I could have done. So I think when I finally got to, because I needed to write out some of the core rules, like rolling dice, I wanted to write out the setup process because we had to go through that around the table. So I had a little cheat card for like, okay, you have to do the basics. And then on page this, and you have to do the character creation. And then on page 16, you need to do the ship. And then I wanted to remind myself to do those questions.
Right.
So I basically spent my time writing cards, just prepping the basic structure of the game, I mm-hmm. guess. But that's only 4 cards. And then, yeah, it says to basically, it recommends, and it gave an example of how to create the first job. So it's a bounty hunter world like Firefly where you're smuggling, basically, as a general rule. And so it basically set up this idea of creating a job. But then what I loved was coming up with questions. And the questions are an interesting mechanism for structuring a game. They're not questions that I ask you. They're questions that are raised by the scenario that I might be putting you into.
Right.
So the job I wrote, because I only had like 20 minutes left at this point, was I called it Disturbing Science. And floating, I wrote, in the Orion Quadrant, I don't even know if I ever gave that information out, maybe I did, is a disabled vessel last seen near the asteroids of Qualax. That was clearly Qualax 7. Oh, that makes it more scientific.
Nice. There you go.
Yeah. This is a private science vessel running experiment on a new flip drive, heavily armed, private security of the highest order. And I wrote, the drive is powered by a new type of antimatter core, highly volatile and extremely dangerous if damaged. Interestingly, I thought I had written it down. I did not write down flip drive. I guess I created that on the fly.
Yeah, because we didn't find that out until we got there, right? Like, because we had the...
Oh, no, I had it written here on a new flip drive. Sorry, okay. Go ahead.
I mean, either way, we didn't get all that information up front, which is a good way to do it. You tried to introduce a couple hooks. Someone didn't take one.
Right.
I took your offer and threw it on the ground and said, I don't want to be that guy.
It. Yeah.
And then let Celeste take the next one, which drove us to this science vessel. So hold there. Had I taken the first offer, which was the guy sister. who had my sister and I owed money to, her, I owed something to, but I pleaded, right. I played dumb. Would we have gone to the same place?
Yes.
Yeah. So, okay.
Yeah.
So we would have figured it out from there, what I owed him, or that place still would have needed, to go there to get whatever I needed.
Yeah, I had no idea what you owed him. That's the fun part.
Right.
You ended up just searching for inverted tech, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But yes, I had no idea what you owed. I was just trying to create. I mean, in a one-off, right? Yeah. And we could talk. That's a good thing to talk about for us, right? Like, how do you? We've talked about it before in concept, but now we can talk about it in. You can put me on the spot because I don't remember.
Sure.
But it's the starting. Okay, the classic one-off D&D. You're all in a pub.
Yeah.
And someone runs in the door, or the pub owner says, oh, you got to pay up or do this thing. Or, you know what I mean? It's this like getting started and getting the party moving into scenario is hard.
Yeah.
And there's this balancing between the party feeling like they have a sandbox to play in, but also feeling like they know what to do to have fun in the game.
Yeah.
So setting up the job, like I knew what the job was, but I don't just want to be like, you know, hit you on the heads and be like, you know, you find up, you've already signed a job offer. You're going, I could, you know, yeah. One solution is to put you like in media res. Like I could have briefed you in and be like, you're in high, you know, inter whatever dimensional space warping to location because you've accepted blah, blah, blah job.
Sure.
But it, because I have so many good players around the table, it's more fun to be like, let's see what these who these characters are and what motivates them.
And I think the game helped out with that too, because it gave us somewhere to start conversation. Like we're already part of a team. So we figured out why we know each other, how we know each other. We don't need to figure that around a table at a tavern.
Right.
And then you introduced a conflict with the job that we had already had. So it helped propel the story to get us to that next piece before we even needed to think about what that next piece was.
Yeah. And that's just because I love the idea of that. Like if you're a bounty hunter, it's just my favorite part of Firefly or any of the movies is when the little ship gets boarded by the, you know, this giant Imperial cruiser or whatever. It's just fun to be like, that's just fun, I think. It's fun to see who are the outlaws here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we got the hook. We go to the place.
You avoided the hook. I gave you another hook.
Which, you know, from you playing the shell game, it's the same hook, just to a different character, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the same job. That's
fine. It doesn't matter how they get it. And you running a table, you can do the same thing. I find a lot of questions that we get or that at least I've seen are how much prep do I need to do for a one shot? And in this case, Sean did one objective that we needed to do. I don't know if you had any more, but you had one objective that we needed to do, knowing that we had 2 or 3 hours to play this game. And then you just feed that in a slightly different way until someone hooks into it.
Yeah. And you decide how much side questing you want to do off the top, right? Like, you didn't take the first hook, and so then, you know, I was like, well, Imperial Cruiser catches you. You know, it just gave me time. I was like, well, this will be fun. Let's do this. And then I was like, okay, let's try again to get you going towards a mission, and that went better.
Yeah. So we got there.
Yeah.
From what you had written on your card to what you started telling us, what point did you have that world fleshed out of the place we were going?
Okay, so because I was prepping so quickly, which I generally end up doing anyways, right? No matter how well thought out, like you, I don't know, but you must be the same, right? Yeah. You go upstairs, you're like, okay, I got plenty of time this morning. And then all of a sudden you're sitting in your computer, you're like, wow, why do I only have 40 minutes left?
I've been stuck on Twitter for the last 50 days.
You know, so it was this moment of, I wrote down flip drive and then it just, I was like, how fun would it be if that was literally, it was literal. The ship flips on itself. Everything is inverted.
Yeah.
And it makes no sense. And I hadn't fleshed it out. So as you were approaching, I'm like, oh, well, it's not going to be. I was thinking zombie guards is what I was literally thinking, Russ. I was like, flip drive, zombie guards. And then I'm like, well, the ship's flipped inside out. Like, what, do I just have zombie guards floating in space? Those aren't dangerous. Like, they can't move.
Yep.
Right. So then I was like, so on the fly, I'm like, well, of course, there's still oxygen as if the walls are there. It's very strange. And so that happened, right? And everyone went with it, which was interesting to listen to. I was like, oh, okay, I guess
it could be the table. It could just be, you know, you talk to your table and just have an open and willingness to accept whatever is coming without necessarily a need for justification. We know it's us, you know, a high tech world.
Yeah.
We're in space. Sure. The place flips. We were hesitant at first to remove our masks, even though it said, yeah, it's cool. Like we didn't find out right away that until Tim's mask got blown off or something like that. And then he started to breathe and it was cool.
That was fun.
Yeah.
I love how he played that.
But it's all about just accepting it, not trying to hyper explain anything. And then find a way to incorporate it within the world. The fact that it flipped and we found out that it was breathable air told us that, okay, well, there's got to be a force field to this ship. There's got to be something keeping us in here, which helps explain the world in a roundabout kind of way. So again, another detail that you can say, but you don't need to have a definitive explanation for why this happens.
Right. Just say it with confidence.
100%.
That's how I go through life.
If you ask Amy, she says I bullshit so much, but I say it with confidence, and then she Googles it later, and then she's like, that's fucking bullshit. Pardon my language.
Same. Yeah. I'm same. I guess that's a GM trait. So the next part was when you came across one of the zombie guards. I had not thought it through. It was literally in the moment where I was like, everything, because I had a lot of fun describing what does a monitor look like when it's flipped inside out? And I was like, you're not going to be able to, it's just going to be a bunch of diodes and shit hanging in the air. And then I was like, oh, there are guards.
There's people on this thing. Yeah.
And they're alive, which that's the part where I was like, oh, well, if the ship inverts, but they're still holding oxygen, if the walls are there, then everything still works, right? Yep. Is what I've set up. And then I was like, oh God, there's people who are inverted. I literally had this realization in the moment.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was all poor Celeste. Watching her face as I was describing was so awesome.
Oh, it was. Well, I mean, the description of it, part of me knew what was coming. Like, everything's flipped. Everything. Yeah. You know that there were people there. And then you start describing it. I'm like, oh, this is great. I love it. Oh, so good. But gross.
Yeah, I had not thought that through. So, but that's another case. Just commit. Be like, you know what? If you've committed a thing to the world, take it to its extreme. Have fun with it. That's what we did. I think that's it. So I created some NPCs. I do everything on a card. So I keep it easy. And that's also what I like about basically games that are based on the apocalypse system, is like powered by the apocalypse. So like I basically have NPCs with like little, like I have some like the guy you were talking to, Ricky the Stick, a customs officer, an alliance trooper. And then I literally have very simple things next to them, like health, armor, damage, and then some notes, like very greedy zombie-like. That's basically all I had. And then I just, like, I can add other things on the fly, but now I basically have, I've thought through sort of the power level, I guess, of things.
Yeah.
So I can pull in something else like it and not have to write it up.
Well, yeah, even just those base concepts of a character, right? A name will tell you a lot about a character. A Ricky the Stick is going to act a lot differently than Rick Santiago, who is very formal in the way that he carries himself.
Yes.
And then give a few descriptors so that when you come across that character, whether you've planned a voice or planned, you know, demeanor or anything like that, it gives you something to kind of fit in, and then you can figure out the rest of them as you go. So you don't have to have all of your NPCs planned out down to the T.
Yeah. And the last thing I'd say is listen to your table. Like, I could tell that everyone was having fun just being a player. And part of that's because we don't get to play as much. But I could just tell everyone was having fun with the silly little interactions they were having in the ship. And that's the nice thing about, by the way, sci-fi ship.
Yeah.
Like, everyone had a bond, like you mentioned before. Everyone was together because they're on a ship together, whether they like each other or not, right? They're a crew.
We've all got a defined job or role. Mm-hmm. Like, there needs to be someone to fix it, fly it, and, you know, be in charge. We figured it out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tim was two of those, Celeste is the other, and I was just there.
you were doing weird science experiments. I was hysterical in the making the thing go away. I won't take it away in case they haven't listened. But yeah, so I think it's like listening to what's fun for the table. If they're having fun on a side quest, spend some time there. Let them have fun and then try the next hook on the thing you had planned.
Those little things help your players to get a little more into character before you have to throw them into the game part of the game.
Yeah.
Cool. And then we ended it.
Yeah. Wrapped it up, ended. We're coming to time.
We kind of set that 2 to 3 hour mark, and we hit a little more than 3 hours, I think, because we were all just so in it. Like, we had you yourself can set a drop point for a game. Mm-hmm. Say, you know, you only got 3 hours, and then just do that. Like, you see the 30 minute mark, just start wrapping things up. Things just become easier to do, even. Mm-hmm. which is sometimes the case, or people just start dying. That's possible too.
Yes, 100%.
And you implemented something to kind of speed us up too, which was the countdown, right? Because we flip the thing, and it's like now counting down to reverse flip. So we had to get the fuck out. Otherwise, yes, we might flip inside while everybody else flipped back normal.
Yeah, and part of that is just feeling the moment where you need, and that's what I like about Power by the Apocalypse games. They teach you how to apply pressure, because you're always being like, now this happens, what do you do? Now this happens, what do you do? And I mean, you learn that in other systems too. Mm-hmm. But that idea of apply pressure, like I'm just like, Inside Out zombies are not, they're disgusting, but they're not that dangerous. They're going to hit you with their liver. So yeah, it was like, I was just like, oh, let's up the stakes, right? And it's starting to count down and someone doesn't have a mask. And like, it just took a situation and made it worse. And it was fun to watch everyone, how they chose to try and solve it. And that's another thing, as GM, you don't have to figure out the solution. Just up the stakes.
Yeah.
And let the players have fun.
Your players are going to figure out how the puzzle or how the trap works.
Yes.
They're going to come up with something that's way more inventive than you would have ever done. Like, you could have just push a button, but they now have like a MacGyver rig with paper clips and all this sort of stuff to try and figure out this simple trap.
100%.
And you just let them go with it.
It's better sometimes if I haven't spent a lot of time coming up with what I think is this really cool mechanism for a trap, because then they have to figure out my solution.
Yeah, which is hard.
And it's really hard.
Yeah.
And we both, you and I, have had tables that are just like, we give up.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
Yeah, you have those off screen or off mic moments where you're being like, okay, you got one more step. You can do it. And they're like, no, we're tapped out. We're stuck in this maze. We live here now forever.
I've been there. So sometimes by not knowing the answer, you can just be like, I'm going to up the stakes. Don't worry about it. And then let your players have fun. And then you can laugh together and be like, that is stupid, but brilliant. I'm going to let it work.
Yeah.
Because I'm not invested in the solution, right? Like, I don't know how you're going to get out of this. Yeah,
and you're just rewarding their creativity and their involvement in the game and the world that you're helping build.
You might be like Russ and just throw yourself into space. Okay. Yeah, it gets you out of the ship.
Yeah. I was trying to be helpful, okay? I had a rope and a hook. What else was I going to do? And a bad roll.
So hopefully everyone enjoyed the game. If you guys have questions, send it to us. Like, we are here. We did this because we wanted to show what it would be like if you only had, if you had to pick a system without a lot of in-depth research. Like, I hadn't read all the books or all of the book.
Yeah.
And then what's it like to put together a one shot? And so hopefully this will help you all realize, oh, it's not as much preparation and there's no secret sauce. It's just, I think the difference is when you've run a few games, it's a little easier to go, oh, I don't have to figure out the whole thing. I need to know the mission and I need to know, I need some NPCs ready to throw in.
Yeah.
Because that takes time, right? To flip through the monster manual or flip through the thing and try and say, oh, what's a soldier and what do they attack with?
Yeah.
So just having that stuff ready so you can throw it in.
Cool. Yeah. Send us your questions, dm2gmcast@gmail.com, or come join us on Discord. Link is down in the description. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. And if you leave us a rating and review, we will send our sincere thank you to your face. Because that's how we do things.
That is how we do things. Yeah. To your face.
To your face.
You know what? We're going to read your name. If you leave us a review, put your name in it, we will read it on the air.
Absolutely. So thank you.
And you can do that not just at Apple and iTunes, but also at podchaser.com.
Thank you for listening, and we'll see you all in 2 weeks.
Woo!
Thank you for listening to DM to GM. If you have questions about getting your game started, send them to us, Russ and Sean. Our email is dm2gmcast@gmail.com. You can also visit us on Facebook or on Twitter at dm2gmcast. You'll find all the links down in the description. In the meantime, get your game started. We'll talk to you soon.